Welcome to A Lunch with Biggie, a podcast about small business and creatives sharing their stories and inspiring you. My guests today started with a simple belief that there is enough for everyone if we all share. They provided burritos and sandwiches to the food insecure in the parks outside and have created a nonprofit that is a standing invitation to big tables, open arms, hope, and abundance because no one has to be hungry or lonely. Please welcome the co-founders of The Picnic Project, Mark Thompson and Ryan Bozeman. What's going on, guys?
Hey. Thanks for having us. Thank you so much for having us.
Great intro.
Thank you. So I really appreciate you guys taking some time to spend some of my lunch break with me. Absolutely. What's your go-to lunch or sandwich?
Honestly, around here, we tend to eat leftovers a lot, okay. But that's because we're big believers in not wasting food.
Yeah.
But probably my favorite sandwich is a Cuban.
Okay.
I love that mix of flavors. It's simple, but delicious.
As a chef, do you make it often?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
I did because I used to be, the sous chef at Spanish River Grill in New Smyrna, and that was on our menu. So I have made hundreds of Cubans, but no, I don't often make them anymore. Okay. Sometimes.
What about you, Ryan?
I'm going to say chicken Philly with mushrooms.
Okay.
Swiss cheese.
I was going to ask if it was if what kind of cheese you were going to put on it. All right. I like that. Those are great. So can you give me, I guess let's go, I'm going to go back just because I understand about the Picnic Project and we're going to talk about that. But my question is, how did you guys meet?
Oh.
Like, because that's like the first part. Like in my research, I was trying to figure out like what's the connecting point. So I kind of am curious, like how did you guys meet?
So I'll bring us up to us. That's a great question. I'll bring us up to a certain point, and you can take it. This is like a strange background. My parents were actually missionaries in a place called, at the time it was called Irian Jaya, Indonesia, which is now New Guinea. It's the island of New Guinea. So I was back and forth between America and Asia, and I moved to the States when I was 17, and I went to a youth group event that this young man was at, and you can take it from there.
So he has a nephew who said, hey, my uncle's coming. He's super cool. You'll like him. And I was like, your uncle is coming? Picturing like somebody who's 20 years older than us. Yeah. I'm like, that sounds a little weird, dude. But all right. And then Ryan walked in and he was not 20 years older.
I was cool and you did like me.
I did. And things have changed.
Well, hold on. Mark, how old were you when you went? Were you 17?
He was 3. So it was weird. It was super weird.
No, I was probably 17.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're real close in age.
Yeah. Okay.
Perfect. Not what I imagined when he had told me his uncle was
coming.
I have
a sister that's 20 years older than me, so I had nephews and nieces that were my age.
Which makes total sense. Yeah. As soon as I would have heard that too, I was like, well, this is a youth group. What are you talking
about?
Why is your uncle? Yeah. That's a little sketch. Yeah. That's a little sketch. All right. Yeah. So kind of give me the origin story, a lunch break version of the origin story of what was the moment where you're like, we need to do this, or you started doing like, you know, from what I read, like burritos under the bridge or sandwiches at the park. Mm-hmm. Kind of give me the origin story of what originated that, what made you feel that you needed to do this or started doing this.
I would say, this was during the recession. We both worked downtown Sanford. Mark is an executive.
2009, right? Something like
correct.
In that range?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I just to give an idea of time frame wise.
Yeah, thank you. Mark was an executive chef at a restaurant downtown. The location is now called The Breezeway. At the time, it was Two Blondes and a Shrimp. And where the way the restaurant is located, the public had access to a bathroom that was in the back of our restaurant. It's a long, strange thing. But folks would often pop their heads literally into the kitchen and say, do you have any food? Unsheltered folks.
Yeah.
And us just being normal dudes trying to grasp with the idea that there's people that have food. We do have extra food. Probably going to throw it away. And just becoming interested in all those issues. But really, it was a personal connection with folks. And it was no longer, because this hunger was no longer an ambiguous kind of out there problem. It was people whose names we knew, whose stories we knew. And so I would say relationships was the real catalyst. And then Mark can talk about some more of our original history from the restaurant.
So that kind of jump started. And then we started, like you said, really just sharing food with friends. We didn't set out to start a nonprofit. That was not ever a thought. So we would literally just go somewhere and bring a couple sandwiches or burritos and hang out and listen to people's stories and just talk and become friends, which is where the idea of Picnic comes from, Picnic Project. That Picnic just grew as we made more friends. So it grew and grew, and so we started doing it weekly at Centennial Park, right across the street from where we are now. They have a gazebo there, a few benches around the outskirts, but there was no real tables or chairs. It was still very picnic-like, and that just kind of made it consistent, and it kept growing from there. I don't know how deep you want me to go, but basically we ended up in here, which is now the neighborhood co-op, 8 years ago. Is that right?
I think 2012. So we were in the park. It grew and grew. And then the pastor at the time, we had no relationship with this. We're at the First United Methodist Church of Sanford. Okay. We have since have a deep relationship with them, and I worked there for a few years. But at the time, they knew that we were having issues. We'd grown over
and,
there.
And there was something about like the park was starting to charge you guys for like almost like if you were like doing like renting out the gazebo like for parties and stuff.
Yeah, so
like
this is what happened. So where we are now, we're in this historic district of Sanford, but we are two blocks away from a neighborhood that is poverty stricken. So there's a red line two blocks from here, and it's an entirely different community. I want to say this, there's an entirely different demographic of downtown Sanford back then as it was now. We are welcomed. We are so supported in this community. The historic district is phenomenal to us. A lot has changed since back then. And our demographic, our folks are primarily disproportionately folks of color. And some of the folks over here in the historic district kind of felt the possession ownership of the park.
Yeah.
And so it caused a little tension. And we weren't going to stop what we were doing because we didn't think that they had, again, entirely different set of people.
Yeah. At the time. At the time of 2009, you know, which is a long time, things changed.
Correct.
And obviously you guys have created a footprint here and part of the community. So that would make sense why. But it's interesting to know the fact that, like, you guys, even though it was like you're doing good and then you're still being, you're kind of at the same time, they're kind of making it a little bit difficult for you, even though you're like, hey, I'm actually like, I'm just giving food. I'm just giving out food for those that need food, you know, that need it. And so that's always an interesting aspect that, you know, and it's great that you're actually, you know, the obviously things have changed and you've created a great community and a great bond with the state or with the city. So, yeah. Which is awesome.
But it is interesting when you do something that you feel right about, you operate with the assumption that everyone in the world is going to agree that this is a good thing. And when you're met with animosity, it's confusing at first. It's just really confusing. So what happened over there was they tried to charge us $300 per event. And we said, with all due respect, this is just a picnic.
Yeah.
And so that was cost prohibitive at the time, probably still is. And so unbeknownst to us, they changed it and charged $20 an hour. And they rented it every Sunday, time immemorial, when we would be there. So the last week we were there, that was when the pastor from the First United Methodist Church came across the street, found out about us, said, move into the fellowship hall for free. Don't worry about it. You have access to bathrooms, a commercial kitchen. People can eat at tables instead of off their laps. You're in out of the weather. And we've been here ever since. And since developed this incredibly close relationship with
this. So how long going from being at the parks to the pastor coming across the street and getting to and knowing you guys, like how long were you guys doing it outside and having to deal with it outside?
A year and a half, 2 years?
Yeah. Sounds right.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, we never intended to start a nonprofit, so we didn't keep track of all these things.
Yeah, no,
we didn't
it.
Have a name we for a while. We didn't have a website for a long time.
I get it. I mean, you guys literally were just like, hey, we just want to do good and we're going to do this. Now, which is also kind of one of those things where it's really impressive the fact that you guys were consistent. I'm assuming consistently coming every week.
Never missed a Sunday, rain, shine, aftermath of hurricane. From when we first did the first Sunday that we told people we're going to be at the park, from Sunday at 1 o'clock, we never missed one Sunday, not one single week until the pandemic.
In total, we have never missed a week in 14 years.
14 years, not one week, zero, no cancellations ever.
And when you first started, because obviously we'll talk about the evolution of where you were to where you are now. When you first started, how did you guys do like the food? Because originally, like you mentioned, Mark, like, you know, you gave out a few sandwiches and a few burritos here and there. But like Like, was it one of those things where, like, I mean, obviously in the beginning, I'm assuming you were not having that many people at the park, but I'm assuming as time went on, people started talking, people started, mm-hmm. and you were consistently then coming. So then more people were coming. How are you getting the resources or to make the food or to make these things? And I'm assuming you had to get kind of creative making to figure out, like, how am I don't have the money. Were you pulling your own money? People giving you money? Give me an idea.
Mother and sister sent what they would have given to their church. But besides that, can you talk about Chef Senate and that evolution of,
so during that time so my first culinary job was with Chef Senate Williams of Candlelight Catering. No longer here. He's in like North Dakota or something, freezing. routinely negative 50 there. But he oftentimes, he believed in abundance too. So almost always every event had leftovers. And so we would get the leftovers in kind of like a chef's challenge, like figure out how to make a cohesive meal out of what we've got. And so there's certain dishes that kind of lend themselves to that, stews, soups, burritos. But depending what it was, we would build the most cohesive dish we could out of that with his help as well. So, yeah, that was our primary source for quite a while, that and just going to Save-A-Lot and buying the cheapest thing we could and turning that into something delicious.
But when you said creativity, you nailed it. On Mark's part at Chef Senate.
Yeah. And then where did you go at the time? You were just, I'm assuming, doing it in your own kitchen because it was like you're just, right? You were just kind of like getting all the food and then putting everything in, getting in your own kitchen, kind of working, making them into burritos and food and converting them and stuff like that?
Before here, before we were in this facility, when we started, it was out of the kitchen of the restaurant we were working in, Two Bonds and a Shrimp. The owner grew less excited about us doing that than in the beginning. So we ended up using Chef Senate's kitchen to prepare and then drive it.
Okay.
For a while, we operated out of a friend's kitchen or his restaurant in DeLand.
Yeah.
We've worked out of the Shriner's kitchen in Altamont, driving all the way to Altamont Sunday morning, cooking, coming all the way back, serving it, driving back to Altamont to do the dishes, and then coming back home.
Jeez. So let's talk a little bit about like the wonderful evolution. I mean, and I don't know if you guys ever have taken a moment to kind of go back and look, because I feel like you guys have been, it's a go, go, go. And you've dealt with like a variety of different things, like, you know, obviously pandemic, you know, so, and I'm always kind of curious, like you guys have come a long way from being, you know, from going outdoors to now being indoors. You have, you know, you guys do your Friday food share. You have the mobile pantry, which we can talk a little bit about as well. I know you guys also do like a health and wellness as well. And you guys are going to do with, and in that you do, have you taken a moment or have you figured out or seen like that progression? Like what has been that progression that you've kind of done and you've built? And it's like, and has there been certain people or certain things that have kind of allowed you along the way to kind of continue to grow? Because I mean, like you said, as you're thinking of this answer, I also kind of want to know at what point did you guys go from, I didn't intend to be a nonprofit and I didn't intend to do this full time. And now look where you are now. Mm-hmm. So just kind of give me a little bit of an idea of like some of that kind of that transition, because that's a huge, you know, God bless the pastor that came and realized, you know, which obviously you would expect if anybody would be a pastor across the street would be like, hey, look what they're doing. Look at the ministry that they're doing and look at the positive that they're doing and they're helping my community. You know, so God bless the fact that the pastor did that because it would be very easy, just like how the rest of some of the community at the time could have just turned turned their nose and been like, no, we don't want that. Mm-hmm. We don't want to allow that. So can you talk a little bit about kind of that transition of where it's come to where it's now kind of evolved? And I know it's a long window, so you can kind of break it up into little pieces or however bite-sized pieces to kind of make it easier.
Yeah, that's a great question and great observation about go, 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 and not taking the time to kind of appreciate the growth. For me, it's kind of like having a child. You see your kid every day. You don't notice, and it takes sometimes a stranger that hasn't seen them in a few years.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when we'll get volunteers come back, they're just blown away. And you kind of – it requires seeing the growth through their eyes to really appreciate how far we've been allowed to come.
Yeah.
Right, Mark?
Absolutely. And – yeah, we check ourselves on occasion. We're like, you know what? We need to recognize where we're at now, because day in, day out, you don't really.
Correct.
But yeah, there's been different things that have really shifted the paradigm for us. Like one was being invited indoors to utilize a commercial kitchen and have a permanent home base. So we've been here for years now. We now have plenty of space to store our things. We don't have to cart them back and forth, don't have to wash dishes in Altamont, things like that. Becoming a Second Harvest food bank partner was huge.
That was probably
the single biggest thing.
Exponentially forward.
Yeah.
Because now we were able to bring in a lot more food for the same amount of money we were paying or less.
Why don't you explain in relation with Second Harvest how we get food?
Yeah, that's a great one. And from what I saw, and it may be a little bit different mathematics wise, but from what I saw on the pantry bus or the pantry truck, it's like for every dollar, seven meals, you guys can provide seven meals to families and to individuals, right?
That's solely because of Second Harvest.
Perfect. So yeah, give me a little bit about Second Harvest, which I absolutely love. They're an amazing organization. So,
and you mentioned you'd volunteered there, so you're no stranger to their work.
Not at all. Yeah, I'm absolutely love them. That's why I was kind of like, when I saw everything, and like, just so you guys, just to kind of give before, like, yeah. I had no concept of the picnic project. I think someone started following me, or I kind of heard about it, and I started. It was on social, or it popped up on me, and I was like, "What is this?" And then I started reading more, and then the more I read, the more that's kind of what drew me to you guys, was because. And then I saw the Second Harvest Food Bank, and then I saw all the different things that you guys do or did, or still do. And then I'm just like, "Wow!" I'm like, I want the opportunity to be able to have. One, be able to have people listen, because, you know, my whole thing, even though it's small business and creatives, it's really about people who are passionate about doing something and actually figuring out a way of making it happen.
Right.
And a lot of times you'll have those people that'll kind of won't allow you or put the roadblocks, and it's figuring out those ways and pivoting and being adjustable. So, so I thought, what better way for me to be able to have a chance to get to meet you guys, get to hear your story, but at the same time also, you know, something that I think I want to be part of. I want to be able to help in some way or form or fashion.
You're helping by doing this, but I feel like we're going to be partners going forward.
No, I think so.
Well,
I think
thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We're not done yet. So let's go. So let's talk about Second Harvest now. Tell me a little bit about Second Harvest and how that relationship came about and how you guys became a partner.
Sure. So in the United States, there is a national organization, Feeding America, that facilitates food donations all over the country. Within that system, there's regional food banks, and ours is Second Harvest Food Bank of Central Florida. And they are amazing, everybody there. But the way it benefits us is the way we can now source our food through them. So certain things are free. So produce that they have there is free. Bread and pastry that's there is free. Frozen goods and refrigerated goods, for the most part, and some of the dry goods are 19 cents a pound.
So meat for 19 cents a pound.
That's amazing.
And we all know that prices are pretty high right now. 19 cents a pound is way better than wholesale is for us. Like that was game changing. And then they also have a wholesale program. So some of the other foods that we need to stock, we can buy wholesale through them. We have some other sources too, but that is our primary one. That's the one that really made the big change for us. So once we became a partner, we didn't have to just rely on leftovers. We didn't have to run to Save-A-Lot Sunday morning and figure something out on the fly. We could start to plan. So we could go and shop in their warehouse for chicken that week, and we know they're going to have it. So we could plan a meal around that. We could order tomato sauce or whatever it is. So it helped us be more consistent, helped us to build more cohesive, more dignified meals, restaurant quality meals, and just gave us some level of security and allowed us to practice abundance, really. So now we don't have to worry that there isn't going to be enough for however many are going to show up on a given day. We'll have enough food for them. Nobody's going to go away hungry. And that began with that original partnership with Second Harvest, and we've been a partner with them for a long time now. And We keep growing that partnership. We keep saying yes to them. We're part of the Nutritious Pantry Network through them now. We receive TFAP food through them, which is a federal commodities program. Boring. I won't bore you with that, but it's free food at the end of the day. And so that partnership just keeps growing with Second Harvest. And so that was huge.
Did some of those, like how long in between from like that to like, let's say 2010 range to then like, how, when did you guys go get involved with Second Harvest? Like at one point, and was there, and I'm assuming there's some prerequisites in the sense of like the fact that you that are here at the it's called the neighborhood
neighborhood co-op.
So because of the fact that you're here and you have the resources like the refrigeration, the storage space, that's one of, I'm assuming that was one of the criteria to be able to do it.
It's basically the same thing a restaurant or food service place would need. We have to pass the equivalent of a health inspection. So almost the same rules, storage 6 inches off the floor, climate control, pest control, all that. So they had to come out and do a site inspection. We had to keep some data for a while. So we had historic data on how many people we were seeing. They wanted to see that we weren't a fly-by-night thing.
Yeah.
And we were going to stick around.
When would you say that you made that like that switch happen? Was it like
2014, I believe.
Okay. So you guys were doing this for like almost 4 years. You guys were kind of like doing the save a lot, trying to figure out ways of kind of how you can do it and meals and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then so for the last 10 years, basically it's become a game changer for you guys and your organization.
Yeah. Absolutely. Game changers. The understatement. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we can only function with the model we use because of Second Harvest.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Which I think is, you know, which is great because obviously you're helping Second Harvest almost in many ways as well, because you're kind of in some ways almost lessening the load a little bit from their main facility, from everyone trying to, if they can even get there, which is the other big area, because I do know that, you know, some food insecure folks, there's also food deserts where they're not able, they have no transportation to get to those places, which is something that you're obviously providing in Sanford. And that's one of the reasons where, how did the mobile pantry, at what point did that come about where you guys were like, hey, we need to now, you know, besides people coming to us, we need to bring it to the people.
I think that was just, well, we got the truck. We got a grant for our box truck.
Speaking of game changing moments.
Yeah. Getting the box truck. That was a game changer. So we now pick food up from Second Harvest, but also we could operate off site.
Yeah.
So I think that just was a product of seeing, responding to a need that we saw. So we give away a lot of food here and seeing people struggle to get it back on their bicycles. And you mentioned transportation. As it relates to food desert, it's not just being able to get to where the food is, but when you're there, you can't buy in bulk. You can only take what you can carry back.
Yeah.
So we saw people struggling to carry all the food we gave them, maybe sometimes leaving food behind that they need, which is frustrating. We've got it, they need it, but because of lack of transportation, or seeing people precariously strap it on their bicycle handles and wobble down the road.
Yeah.
So we work closely with our District 2 Commissioner, Commissioner Kerry Wiggins Jr., close relationship with him.
Senior.
Sorry, I just gave credit to the son. He's a great guy too.
Yeah.
But
he just looks so young.
Yeah. So he deals with all the permitting that we need. So we go out into communities. Like last Friday, we do these each a month offsite at least, where we went into area that was exclusively Section 8 housing. So everyone's in need. Pull right up to the apartment complex and replicate the same process we have here, the same model on site, right out of the back of the truck. And then people can come right out of their apartment complex, get what they need, walk right back inside, and just takes transportation right off the table as a food barrier or access to food.
So barrier. I know, obviously, the pandemic. Well, first let's go, at what point, I'm going to ask this part for question first, and then we'll talk about, because I know pandemic obviously was like a kind of made the whole, you had to shift and make a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. At what point in this storyline did you guys say, I'm doing this like full time? Because you're a chef. Ryan, what was your usual career, or what was your career path? Because obviously I know like your origin story with your family being missionary.
I don't know if you'd call a pool guy a career. Is that a career? No. I was floundering professionally, but once I got, I don't even call that. Once I got involved with the Picnic Project, that just became...
That was your passion.
Beyond. Yeah. Absolutely. And I didn't really care what else I did to pay rent as long as this was going on.
I love it.
And there was new pastors came to this church. It's a couple, Dave and Megan Killingsworth. And when they came here, they just really got deeply involved in the Picnic Project. They're phenomenal. And she hired me on as director of community engagement for the church. And I worked there for 3 years. But we've told people before, if there's, and I'm sure this has been said many times, if there's something you're so passionate about that you fully, desperately believe in its worth and its value, then you might have to be willing to do it for free for a while.
Yeah.
If you truly believe in it.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the case for us. We didn't even try to fund ourselves. It was kind of, a board was assembled, and I think other people kind of put our salaries together for us. Even when that happened, that was other people kind of doing that on our behalf.
That's crazy. And then same thing for you, Mark, because Mark, you were a chef, and it's, you know, so like, at what point did you kind of just say, I'm shifting, and I'm obviously you're still in the culinary world, but like, at what point did you say, I'm shifting, and I'm the Picnic Project is my full time thing?
I mean, really, my hand was forced a little during the pandemic.
Okay,
but for years, I kind of wanted to be out of the restaurant business, and I wanted to do this full time, but I just didn't see how that could happen. Because, you know, we still have to make money. If I'm not going to be working my day job, then
correct. How am I going to support? How am I going to support?
But that was always something to live. Yeah. In the back of my head. I was like, I'd rather be doing that.
Yeah.
And I don't hate restaurants.
No.
I enjoyed a lot of facets of it. There's a lot of stress and long hours, but there's a lot of fun and creativity that goes into it. But I always, like, just in the back of my head, I never knew how it would happen or when or anything. I always really wanted to do this full time. And then during the pandemic, that happened due to a confluence of factors. But part of that was just the demand went through the roof. So we needed just physically, logistically, we needed people to move food from one place to another, and lots more food than we had been doing. And during that time, we got a federal grant, which helped us buy the box truck, help us to scale up as a COVID relief agency, one of the block grants. And so that was an opportunity. And at the same time, the restaurant I was working for closed. So now I had time. And even then, for a while, you know, I was still getting paid from that restaurant. So we were still doing this for free.
Yeah.
And then it just, part of it was having a board come on and they're like, we need to make this legit. And you guys have been scrappy long enough. We're going to put some systems in place.
I'm really glad you brought up doing this part time, because when you talk about like exponential propulsions forward,
yeah,
being able to do this full time was massive. We were kind of plateaued. And I'll say this to the church's credit, when they hired me to be director of community engagement, they allowed me to do this. They said, this is valuable work, we value it, and we believe in it, and we're willing to pay you as a church to work for the Picnic Project. So I was already, so eternal credit to them for that.
Yeah.
But we saw the value of how much more, like I said, we kind of plateaued. But when we both started doing this full time, we were able to go up to another level even. And then that encouraged more support. When people saw what we could do when we were doing it full time, then people were
that makes
very
sense.
Generous.
So a few things. One, the 501c3, when you guys decided to go 501c3 which is like a nonprofit classification, how difficult was that of a process for you guys from the time you started? Like, was it one of those where were you guys a 501c3 by the time you partnered with Second Harvest?
Yes, have to be to partner with Second Harvest.
Okay, so that's what I was curious of. So like, so you basically went the process. Sometime in there, you're like, hey, we should become a nonprofit, because that's literally what we're doing.
Right.
Yeah. You know, if we're not for profit, we're trying to help. And then, is that during the time of the pandemic? Is that when it shifted? The shift happened of, hey, we're not just going to be doing meals, and now we're going to be providing, you know, groceries or, you know, food, like a pantry where, like, you know, it's kind of like, and we can talk a little bit about how that process works, but is that when the shift happened where it was like, I'm no longer cooking. I'm now almost like a shop where I'm trying to help, because you're right. A lot of people, those numbers must have like, exponentially shot up.
Absolutely.
You know, during the pandemic, people losing jobs, not having a place to go or work, and you know, rent going up and all those type of things. So talk a little bit about that decision of like, hey, where, you know, where you had to make that shift and what, how, you know, how you guys decided on that shift, and then where that shift now is taking you, you know, and kind of with your, with the amount of families you guys are serving and helping and stuff like that.
So let me just start and then you jump in. So it was, the shift was literally overnight. So we served on Sunday, and on Saturday night we got notified, the government, 200 people was the most you could have in a building. So we were like, okay, we're right about there. Sunday morning we came, Mark started cooking, and it was down to 50 people. Take all the chairs outside, and then by that night we're all on the phone with each other like, it just sits down to 10. What are we going to do? This is what we do, and we can't do it anymore. And that week, Mark and the pastors from this church that I mentioned and a couple other people designed the system that we still use to this day, and we resumed with being a grocery distribution agency that Friday.
Wow.
From Sunday serving.
And there's a lot of there's got to be crazy logistics now, because the, you know, and the, what I'm thinking of in the course of that time frame, that's less than a week.
Yeah.
And the fact that you guys went from, hey, we now need more supplies, or we need more of all these things, because I was just making meals. I was making like a meal or whatever, and trying to go that, instead of now I'm actually having to create, I need fruits and vegetables and all these other things to help supply these people for.
Absolutely.
And then is that the decision you guys kind of made, like, hey, let's make something that we can provide someone sustainability for a week?
And it was something we could do while respecting safety concerns, you know. So we had folks, we turned it into a walk-up distribution outside with plenty of airflow, socially distant. But that was the only thing in that moment we could do and still ensure that people got food. And to speak to the logistics, absolutely. We went, like, we had a small food pantry at the time.
Yeah.
But we were ordering, like, hundreds of pounds of food at a time. Now we're ordering thousands of pounds, tons of food at a time, pallets. Like, we were bringing in pallets every week, like, many pallets.
Thank God for the box truck.
Right.
Yeah.
For a while, we were using the box truck to pick up from Second Harvest and having a delivery from Second Harvest at the peak when the demand was the highest.
Well, for the first couple of years of the of the pandemic, so I said we did Fridays. We did Fridays and Sundays for the first couple of years, two separate distributions for folks that couldn't make it during the week because they were working.
Yeah.
And you talk about, you know, we're in Central Florida in terms of the pandemic hitting local economy. I mean, restaurants, bars, hotels, that's what we are.
That's what we are. Yeah.
And so people that had never had to be and never had to go to a food, never thought about going to a food pantry before, were here. And that was interesting too, to see, you know, everyone understands they're one paycheck away, but people, that being demonstrated to people was, so we saw a lot of interesting things early on.
Yeah. There's and one of the things that I truly appreciate, and I know a lot of organizations when they deal with folks that are, you know, food insecure, you know, the idea of dignity and the fact of like, not, you know, it must be a very hard emotional thing to be able to kind of be like, hey, I'm in need and I need to ask for help. People don't want to ask for help. So can you talk a little bit about that process of like how you guys handle if someone were to come and, like, let's say there is someone in need that wanted to come and be, you know, and kind of come to the, you know, the picnic project, and, you know, they live, and like, are there some criteria, like, you know, obviously, you know, do they have to live in the Sanford or, you know, in Seminole County? You know, what are some of the elements, and then how are some ways that you kind of have and kind of be able to provide that dignity to those folks? Because I know that's something you guys find very important to be able to have, that, you know, very open, kind of like, I, you know, anyone can come, we're here to help and serve you, and kind of like in that aspect. So can you kind of talk a little bit about that?
So let me back up. We've always really prioritized dignity. When we were doing meals, I'm going to brag on Mark because he's uncomfortable doing it. Mark is an executive chef. He's phenomenal, but his original training was in catering, so he can make delicious meals in mass bulk. So if you look on our website, Mark used to create some incredible meals, but we try to convey dignity in any way, just what we call it. So we'd call it a community meal, I mean, some people call it a feeding. We'd correct anyone. No, we're not feeding anyone. This is a community meal. It's not. So words matter. We just believe in doing a lot of small things to kind of create an aggregate effect of dignity. So Mark would create these elaborate meals. He'd show the volunteers how to plate it so they'd be plated in a certain way. But then we were able to serve. Someone offered to give us a bunch of dishes, real silverware. So my girlfriend at the time went down, drove down to Gainesville, picked up all these dishes, and we thought, what a great way to create dignity. And again, another just small thing.
Yeah.
Early on, we had a bunch of kids that used to come here, teenagers, and all of a sudden a bunch of volunteers came in to serve, and all our kids just disappeared and realized they were embarrassed. They went to school with some of the kids that were coming to volunteer.
Got it.
And that is just not okay. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's rough.
So we just decided that we're going to redouble our efforts to do anything. So serve on real plates, real silverware. The money we saved on paper goods, we were able to pay folks from the community to wash those dishes and then, you know, and pay them well. And so just these incredible meals served on real plates, real silverware. So we've always emphasized dignity.
And emphasizing that it was open to all.
Yeah.
It was not, like, it wasn't just for people who were struggling in that moment. So we've had a lot of folks come because it was a good meal and it was a good time to hang out and meet people across the table that you normally wouldn't sit with. So that was a big thing for us. And we've seen it play out, you know, over the years, like just disparate populations of people meeting together over food. And that's always been real special to us and
yeah,
hopefully to them.
No, I totally get that. That's amazing. So how does the process work? Since, you know, once obviously we're now past the pandemic, so it's a little bit different on how they do it, but like, how would it work if someone were to come up? You know, I know you guys have kind of like certain things that you guys ask, you know, but at the same time you provide, it's not one of those things where you're just getting, you know, like here, this is what you get and that's it. Like you're providing a shopping experience, which is one of the things I got to go and see, you know, and I'm kind of curious if you can kind of let listeners kind of get a better idea of like what experience someone would get if they were coming in, and how they get that. Cause that is a big area of dignity that you brought up, which is great, Ryan, when we talked earlier about that, about how like you feel like you're actually getting to select things. And then Mark, you brought up, and I'll shut up so you guys can talk about it, about kind of that. I'm really excited. I love the fact that what you guys are doing. So that, talk a little bit about that when someone comes in and asks for, you know, the questions that you may ask or what you're seeing. And that's kind of more where I'm coming from, is like what you're kind of seeing. Cause obviously there's people that have rent, that have a home, some that may not have a stable home life, mm-hmm. or a stable place to live. So kind of provide a little bit of you know, context of where how it kind of goes.
Sure. I think it starts, before they even get to us, like, again, everybody's welcome. And if you are hungry, we're going to give you food. No judgment zone. You know, there are some questions that we do ask. Ideally, they live in Seminole County due to our food sources. But if somebody comes here from across the river in Deltona or DeBary, we're not going to turn them away. They're going to get food that day. We may help them find a pantry closer to them.
Yeah.
But they will get food.
And those aren't our guidelines. Those are imposed on us.
But again, like very low bar. We make it as low a bar as possible. And everybody's going to get something when they show up. So when somebody comes here for the first time, we believe in open arms. We're welcoming. We don't want this to be like a somber, like shameful, whatever. So we try to keep it a nice experience, have everybody practice hospitality, smiling and welcoming. And that's something we ask of our volunteers too. We want that culture in place so that people feel like they're welcome. They feel it when they walk up. Basically, the first time they come, we register them. They get to sit with some very nice folks, and they have a conversation. And we, at that time, can determine, you know, their specific situation, whether they're housed or unhoused, if they're housed but only have a microwave, if they don't eat pork, if they're vegetarian. All those things we can find out then. And then from that point, we can work with them to get what they need most. But everybody who comes gets a choice of produce. We're really big on fresh produce. So each week we have about five, six, sometimes more different types of fresh produce that folks can choose from. And so they get to pick what they want. If they want it all, they get it all. Today we had apples, white potatoes, sweet potatoes, baby carrots from a local school garden, hydroponic lettuce.
Apples.
Crazy cabbage. That cabbage is humongous.
Cabbage that was gleaned from a farm, a local farm. So giving folks that option and letting them choose or opt out of certain foods just helps with that experience of dignity and lets them have the autonomy of what they're eating. We're not governing what they're eating. We offer sweets and snacks too. I think everyone deserves that, especially if you're struggling. Yeah. Why shouldn't you have a sweet or a cookie or something? You made it through the day, you know? So we're not, we like to have nutritious options, but we have the other options too, but that's all part of that dignity and letting people choose what they're eating.
And then what Mark does when he's, when someone's coming up, he will say, we have folks that are sheltered, folks that are unsheltered, and we give meat away, frozen meat, and frozen meat would not be of any value to someone who's outdoors. So what we do, we make two bags, a U bag, which stands for unsheltered, and S bag, which stands for sheltered. Only the volunteers know that. And then Mark just kind of code phrase, he'll say, are you able to cook meat where you're at? If they say no, that's unsheltered. And he just says U bag to the volunteers. No one knows what that stands for. And then that person, and then those bags have other canned protein, tuna, chicken breast, sardines, Vienna sausage, stuff like that. So they still get all their protein, yeah. But they can actually, in the way they can use it, and they can maintain all their dignity.
Yeah. No, I love that. And then since you've gone to this model, there's other elements that you guys have also obviously have continued to add. It's kind of like that progression as more people are needed, more are coming, right? It's kind of like the idea of abundance. The more you give, the more are coming because of what greatness you're giving. And so like some of the stuff that I know you guys do, like you offer some like health kits, but I also know that you guys have kind of evolved as well as also have like a monthly, like lunch and learns and health. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about kind of some of those things where you've kind of now evolved and had, like, I know, I think Advent Health is involved, as well on those. Talk a little bit about kind of how you've now kind of added other elements, not just the food element, but some other and the health aspects and things like that.
That's great.
Definitely. So I think some of that comes with the people that we see. So we kind of organically have changed over the years with that. When we started, just by the nature of what we were doing, like seeking out folks and sharing food with them, that was predominantly folks who were unhoused, living in the woods, living on the streets. Now that we're here and doing grocery distribution and other things, we're seeing a lot of folks who are precariously housed or couch surfing. And so basically we are here to give them food, but there is a lot of intersections of food with health. And that's something we have learned as we've grown and as we've gotten to know our community better. There's certain chronic health issues that the community suffers from, primarily hypertension, diabetes, and food is a way to counteract those chronic health issues. But when you see children and school-age kids, you're not going to do well in school if you're hungry, and you're not going to do well in school if you're not eating a balanced diet.
Yeah.
So we try to do that, and we have grown over the years. So we've partnered with Seminole Department of Health for many years, and they do things like vital checks and referrals and education. But more recently, we have developed a partnership with Advent Health, and one of the programs we do is called Eat Well, Live Well, and it's a monthly series that is kind of hosted and conducted by Nurse Cynthia Hawley, who is an amazing woman. She's got a lot of letters after her name. I don't remember them all. I don't know how she does everything she does. But she's amazing. People love her. She talks about a health topic. They bring in guest speakers almost every month. This Monday, we're having our next one, and it's on digestive health, and a general surgeon's coming in who specializes in digestive health remediation. And then I do a cooking demo. We share lunch. We share more produce and really try to get people to just be conscious of what they're eating and show them how they can still make healthy decisions or practice moderation on a budget with limited food access. Yeah. So a lot of the recipes that I'm sharing are things that folks can get from us or folks can get really affordably at any grocery store.
Yeah. No, that's great. And I know you guys also do like have like health, like you kind of have like little health bags where, you know, things that people need, you know, like the different, it's like ways to offset. And I know one of the things that you kind of mentioned, like offset, you know, like the toothbrush and deodorant, because obviously those all things kind of bleed in are all things. These are all money grabbers, especially mm-hmm. right now where a lot of people are spending, you know, spending so much money. And what was the phrase that you used, Mark, on what folks are?
That was good.
Rent eats first.
Yes. So like usually, obviously, Instagrammers are, you know, they say the camera eats first. No, the rent eats first. Yeah. That's like what everyone, you know, you got to pay that rent where you're going to live. If you're living, depending on where you're living, and especially with the cost of living right now, mm-hmm. It's so important. And that's like one of the great benefits of what you guys are providing, because every little bit helps when you can do that, yeah. especially be able to eat, you know, eat fair meals and have, yeah. you know, and have something nutritious.
I mean, to you be think about a pound of meat or a thing of deodorant, like that's like $6. That's yeah. a bus pass, yeah. you know. And if you need transportation to and from work or to a grocery store or to a food pantry, like that's huge. And so what we're doing is supplemental. Like you could technically survive on what we give you, but yeah. it's supplemental, but it is shaving those dollars. Saving just a few bucks can make a big difference in deciding if you're going to have dinner or pay for your prescription.
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of, we were speaking earlier, disproportionately our demographic is what's called precariously housed, which is 80% or more of your income goes just to rent. So wow. you have the sliver of your income left for every other expense. So when we do toothpaste, say that might only cost $1, but that's one more dollar that you can allocate towards. And same thing with food. For everything we give you, that's another couple bucks that you can allocate towards that other 20%. Yeah. And just basically try to chip away at that other 20% is the idea.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. So let's talk about a little bit. How can people help? Like, what are some ways? I know your website has some, but I'm kind of curious. Like, what are ways that someone who's listening, hearing for the first time, like, oh, what's this picnic project? What can I do? What can I do to help? I mean, there's many ways of doing it monetarily, obviously, but there's also mm-hmm. sweat equity also kind of works. So mm-hmm. can you talk a little bit about some of the ways that, you know, people that are listening to this and want to be, you know, want to take part and help and figure out a way to help? How can they help you guys?
I mean, I think the first step, easy step would be subscribe to our email, our newsletter, and you can do that on our website. And that way you can stay in the loop. But as you mentioned, financial donations are always appreciated. And we, like we said, with our partnership with Second Harvest and our other food sources, we're able to really make those dollars go far.
The example I always use is just to communicate yeah. the idea that our money goes farther with us because of Second Harvest. Is if someone buys a box of cereal for $6-$7 and they give that to us, we get that for 19 cents a pound. So for the price of one box of cereal, we could have gotten
yeah.
five cases of it. And we obviously appreciate people's generosity, but yeah. we just want to see their dollars stretch yeah. the farthest. So there is a spot on our website where there is some stuff that we have to pay market price for that we just have to get. Canned foods and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So if it's not a monetary donation, there is a spot on our website that will let you know stuff that we have to have that we pay full price for. Okay. That would be
right. Yeah. And most of that is shelf stable. As we mentioned at Second Harvest, most of the perishable goods we're getting freer for 19 cents a pound. But things like beef jerky, canned tuna, we're paying almost what you pay in the store. So those are great for food drives, which is another way of helping. Volunteering on our website. Everything's going to come back to the website.
Yeah,
but there's an event yeah. calendar, and right on that event calendar, you can click to RSVP to volunteer. So details are on there. We have our main things every week are Thursday. We have volunteers come together to pack and sort to prepare us for Friday. And then Friday is our main day where we share food. So those are our consistent volunteer opportunities, but we do offsite events, the mobile pantries, community events. We just did Easter dinner, things like that where we need more volunteers. Yeah. We do have a fundraiser coming up, which you can buy tickets for or volunteer. Two options, two ways to help there.
What tell people about it, because obviously the episode, when they listen to it, my episodes are evergreen, so obviously it's a yearly event. This is your second one, right? I believe.
Yes.
But tell people a little bit about that event, in case they want to do it. I'm actually talking to my wife because we're thinking about coming to attend for it. But
that
just
would
tell
be
people
great.
Tell people a little bit about the event and what it's called and what, you know, what to expect and what it does.
Sure. It is the Taste and Sip of Sanford, and it's a food and drink experience. It's a daytime event, and we pull together. Sometimes I call in favors from my experience in the restaurant world, but we bring in local chefs and culinary folks to prepare small sample size dishes, and those are paired with mostly local craft beers, some wine. We have Orlando City Kombucha this year doing a non-alcoholic option, and a couple other options, and there's live music, there's a raffle, but it's really, we highlight local independents is the ones we really want to support. So you're not going to see any big chains here, but we have, like, this year, Annie D's Soul Food, Red Panda Noodle Company.
I was going to ask if Red Panda was going to be there.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Wonder Maid,
the marshmallows.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nice.
World famous marshmallows. Yeah. Alex's Fresh Kitchen.
I love him.
Yeah.
Is going to be doing his Mambo Burger.
Uh-huh.
And we've got, I think, like 15 different culinary producers.
That's awesome.
That I can't think of off.
No, that's the bat. Fine. And you can definitely see it on the website.
Yeah.
And then we've got beer from Deviant Wolf, Celery City Craft, D's Brothers. So it's a really cool event. Last year, it was actually held at D's Brothers, and we sold out. So we moved to the Civic Center this year. It's April 20th from 11:30 to 4. And you can find information on our website about that, or go to tastesipsanford.com.
Okay.
Let me ask you, what was the trajectory of your growth as a business right out of the gate?
Oh, mine is such a... I kind of tell people that my idea was so different that it was kind of one of those where in my world I had no idea. My wife, I still have a full time job, so I told my wife basically, like, I won't go bankrupt, but I have no idea like where it would go. So it's taken a while for it to go. I've been doing it for 11 years. It's at a point now, and probably it's been like at least 5 years now that I've been at a point where it kind of pays for itself. So like it literally sustains, but I don't take any money off of it. I just literally invest it, keep reinvesting it into the brand because I just want it to grow.
Well, you become like an entity, man.
And I appreciate
that. You're an Orlando
that.
Entity.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of those things, but a lot of it is just because I just love Orlando. Like I've been here for so long. I've been here since 98. Since 94, because I went to school. I graduated in 94. I graduated college, UCF, in 98. So I've been in Orlando since 94, and I love this place. So it's like, to me, it's one of those things where I'm a huge proponent of the small independent, the different people that are kind of build our city and our community, Central Florida. And a lot of it also is the fact that as much as I like theme parks and going to theme parks, I love what you don't see at the theme parks,
right?
And I think to me that's kind of the biggest thing. So I love being able to see that. And then to me also the other big thing for me, to be honest, is the fact that we a lot of times we talk about like the rest of the world outside of where we live, but like homelessness, food insecurity, all those things are all things that we're all living in our own communities. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those where it's always like a tough, you know, for me, especially being like a food themed brand, to me that hits home. Cause I'm like, I want everyone to be able to enjoy a sandwich or I want everyone to be able to enjoy food.
That's something we've talked about. I mean, I worked in some nice restaurants and most of the staff couldn't afford to eat there.
Yeah.
Let alone people who are struggling, and we're making incredible food from local farms. And that just, when you start dwelling on that, you're like, man, like, I won't name the restaurant, but one of the restaurants had a homeless camp right in the woods behind it. And those folks would, again, different restaurant, but still come to the back door, would use our water to bathe and grab for cooking and things like that. And inside, we're selling like $100 steaks.
Yeah,
just the dichotomy.
And so seeing that contrast really makes you think.
Yeah.
And so that was something that kind of woke me up to it, and just made me think more about what could be done about that situation. And because I do believe that everybody deserves good food, just because you're struggling at the moment doesn't mean you shouldn't have quality food, quality, healthy, have those options, you know?
Yeah. And that's not something I've heard a lot of from people that are in, you know, food-based businesses like yourself, to take the perspective of when viewing homelessness or hunger, to go, I enjoy food. I love food. And I want, like you said, I want everyone to enjoy a delicious sandwich. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I love that from that place.
And I think, well, a lot of it for me is the fact that I do, a lot of times it's kind of like, how can you help, or how can you figure out things like that? And to me, like, I love the fact that like there are certain areas that have like those refrigerated food pantries or those pantries that they're able to provide, because and I love the fact that the school systems has provided a more of an onus on the fact of being able to provide food for all, for all meals, for breakfast and, breakfast and lunch for students, no questions asked, because it's very difficult. It's very difficult. Food is so important. I love food. So it's like, I want everyone to be able to enjoy food and should have food, because, you don't have food, your brain's not operating right. You're not doing things. And sometimes you just need that little treat and or that little something. Mm-hmm. So I totally understand.
Well, I love your perspective on that.
No, and I appreciate that. But I love what you guys are truly love what you guys are doing. I have a few questions, because I know we've gone into a little bit of a longer lunch break, but I just really have enjoyed our conversation.
Me too.
What's been your favorite part, and what's been the hardest part of running the Picnic Project?
Well, my favorite part is two things come to mind. This past Sunday we did Easter dinner here, and I thought it was such a cool group from such diverse backgrounds, and just seeing everybody coming together around the table and really having just the best time. It was so cool. And I don't know why, it just struck me as extra special this Sunday, because we've seen it before. And the other is like sharing, exposing people to food that they may not have had. So we tell one story. There was a young man here once, and we had fresh raspberries and asked him if he knew what that was. And he said no. And when we said raspberry, he's like, what? I thought that was just a Kool-Aid flavor. It's a real thing.
Oh, wow.
So those are cool moments too.
Yeah.
So when kids get excited about vegetables, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think I'm a complete people person. So I just love being able to provide people in a cheerful way without making them feel any sense of embarrassment. I love being able to provide people's needs, stuff that they need. I love being able to say yes. I love being able to say, someone says, I need this so badly, do you have this? And being able to go, yes, be right back. And then just show kindness to them, compassion, make them feel at home here, make them feel, that's something I take home with me. It's like I could go home and sit in silence and just relish.
It fills your cup.
Yes, mm-hmm. Well said. And my least favorite thing is developing these relationships, and we do food, but then as you get to know people, see all their needs and go, we do food, man, I'm sorry, I can't help with your medical or your dental,
so your utility bill.
So being able to say yes is my favorite thing, and having to say no to some stuff is my least favorite thing to people that you come to love dearly, you know.
Great corollary.
That's great. That's got to be tough though.
Write that down, Mark.
It's got to be tough. You'll be able to go back and listen to it. So two last questions. One is, what advice would you give someone for wanting to start something?
Start. I mean, like Ryan said earlier, if there's something you're passionate about, start doing it. We didn't really get into this, but the first thing we did was started volunteering somewhere else, and then seeing a need that we could meet But we started by just getting involved. So there was a program called Grace and Grits that was at the Civic Center. And for many years, they'd been having a community meal. So we learned some lessons from them. We learned people and made connections there. So I think that's the first thing, like just take the first step and just, if there's something you're passionate about, take one easy first step.
Get involved.
And see, get that experience, make some connections.
There is a just going. Natural momentum that comes with starting.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's a million different ways of saying that. Is it Jim Collins greater to good or good to great, whatever. He talks about the flywheel concept where just momentum. Once you start getting something, then it eventually just propels and it's going on its own. Yeah. But it's the almost supernatural power of the momentum that comes with starting to do it. That's cliche, obviously, but there's a reason it's cliche.
Yeah. No, I love what you said, Mark, about the fact of getting involved and like wanting to do it. Because sometimes I think what happens is when we start thinking of things, we all want to run instead of walk. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to actually crawl, or sometimes just take a few steps. And sometimes that's the way to do it is kind of, and then at the same time, why reinvent the wheel?
Right.
If you can kind of learn from some of those other organizations or other places and do something. I always like, you come along sometimes and you're like, I really want to do something. You really want to do it. And then you go and you may create like this larger than life or idea or larger, you know, thing. And sometimes that goal is great, but that may not be the initial goal that you need to go to. You may need to go first step, mm-hmm. which is like, hey, I'm going to volunteer, learn how to do this, maybe so that I can then implement it in my own community or how I want to do it, but I can then learn from it. Which is great because it kind of works with small businesses the same thing. It's like mm-hmm. nothing wrong asking other people, you know, hey, how are you doing this? But at the same time, hey, how can I help? How can I shadow? How can I learn? Mm-hmm. How can I work for free? Like you mentioned, mm-hmm. Ryan, you know, like what can I do to learn and kind of grab a little bit more knowledge and understanding and kind of, you know, and as that thing goes, you start developing and building from there.
And that's great. And I'd say another benefit of that is by kind of taking small steps, you can kind of get it, feel like, is this, when I decided this was going to be my passion, is that going to be long term? And so instead of just making kind of emotional, like I'm all in on this, kind of take baby steps, and you can understand beyond the initial emotion and passion of wanting to do this. Is this something that I can sustain this passion? You know, so when you start on a small level, you can, if you're volunteering, you can either kind of burn out or you can get on fire and be like, I want to do this times 10.
Yeah. Scratched your itch. And then you're like, I'm still thirsty or hungry for more.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you realize I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what I
know. You haven't invested all this time and this money is enough, or whatever
and
else.
I can go back and I can just do it when I need to and correct. Do whatever. I totally get that. How can people follow you? Obviously the website, and give me social media, give me all the ways that people can follow you. Obviously they're going to be in the show notes, as well. So people will be able to click on those things and see those things. And then when we share on social, they'll be able to see all those things as well when they'll be able to go onto your website, but tell people how they can follow you.
Well, the website is picnicproject.org and, shout out to, a volunteer who did that website for us. It's beautiful.
It is a very nice
website. Casey. Yes.
Casey Ruggleman did that. One of our volunteers who said, I can pass out food, but I also have the skill set you might be interested in. And we're glad we took him up on that offer. Picnicproject.org. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/picnicproject. Instagram is /thepicnicproject. And those are our main ones. Don't bother with the others.
You do have a YouTube channel.
We do. The YouTube channel, I don't know how you get to that. /picnicproject or search.
Once you go into their Instagram, make sure you figure out the logo because it's you know, there's other picnic projects that come up. but you go on YouTube and you can kind of see because you can. I may have done some research during my time watching and kind of seeing that.
That's how you knew some of this.
I knew some things. Yeah.
Wait, I know there's a picnic project in England started after us that is a dating service.
Yes. So I saw that. That was one of the first things I clicked on, and I was like, "Well, this isn't what it was." Kind of craziness is that? that's hilarious. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much to Mark Thompson, Ryan Bozeman of the Picnic Project. Man. I really appreciate
it. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for the interest. And I've genuinely enjoyed getting to know you today. And I've genuinely enjoyed this conversation. Sincerely, you're an awesome guy. Central Florida loves what you do. I love it that you come from a small business background. And now that you've become, we decided you're an entity, that you kind of are doing what you can to help out other small businesses. So thank you.
I really
you're phenomenal, man.
I appreciate that. That's definitely our show for today. If you like the episode, you know, share it, tell people about, I can't stress enough, if you like a guest, reach out to them, tell them that they inspired you or did something, share their business, share their charity, do whatever it is that needs to be done. Word of mouth is free, people. It's free. You just do something, at least kind of like it, share it, tell people, more people about it. And obviously if you like what I'm doing, subscribe. Tell your friends. If you want to support me, you can support my brand, Deli Fresh Threads. You know, obviously I love sandwich selfies. You can send that. Just send me, interact with me. But thank you. Until next time, keep eating sandwiches and follow your passion.